So, Jean, welcome to McAllister TV. Now, I'm interviewing Jean, and Jean is a remote. Jean, why don't you tell people who you are?
I guess I've become, originally I picked Jean Ko-sensei Jean, or Jean Ko-sensei, because sensei, and I do martial arts mostly focused primarily and originally around the Japanese type, which is sensei as teacher, and Ko means with. So I teach with people to help, I facilitate their learning. So that's why I picked that. But I guess I've become known across the world as Jean Decode. So that's my name now. So, and then I do, you know, from the martial arts and the military training I got, also I do remote viewing and soul travel and that kind of things. That's, you don't astral travel, it's too dangerous, so I do that. And also do decoding. I'm good at pattern recognition, so I do that. And that's kind of how I got started. I'm blessed to teach with some decodes, primarily the primary one, which is the DOMS. God is helping me.
You are a former military, correct?
Yes, Navy. I did almost a little over 21 years.
So, yeah, I just wanted to get that in there because the DOMS and all of that stuff, you know, and there was a remote viewing that was going, that's been going on in the military, that they started that maybe in Russia.
Yeah, Russians started it, primarily the Soviets, of course, at that time.
Yeah.
And then they got real, the U.S. picked up on it because of its ability. And then the Chinese picked up on it, and they've, you know, took it into the very scientific levels where they have monitors that pick up all the energy in a room. And when a remote viewer comes into a room, the energy levels and various light levels that are not in the visible light spectrum go way up. And they've actually developed technologies to stop remote viewers from coming in that are doing it through the astral body. So they can stop remote viewers using astral projection. You can't stop those using soul projection, but you can stop those using astral projection.
So would it be safe to say, like in a nutshell, that you're a former military, you are a decoder, you're a remote viewer. So getting around to what's happening right this minute, we're in the month of October, and there's a variety of reasons that the White Hats or the Patriots chose October as, and some of them we're not privy to, but I know that you know about their ritual schedule. And I think that that is a very important aspect as to why they are doing this, is all taking place right now in October. Can you get into this? Because I know that you know about this.
Yes. Their highest satanic holiday, of course, is what's known as Beltane, which is May 1st. And that's why, you know, in the old radio days, like in World War II and things, they would go, May Day, May Day, I'm going down. Because they take us down, the humans, they try to take us down and do the blood sacrifices. That's their highest day for coven initiation, primarily for initiating new witches and warlocks into the covens. But the other day that is extremely powerful, when they do all their hexes and trying to create the new world order and that stuff with all their black magic, is known as Halloween. For basics, for most people, the word would be Halloween. They call it Samhain, which is one of Satan's avatar names, of the 72, why the pyramid on the back of the dollar has 72 stones, is one for each of his names he's been known throughout time. And so that's why they do it as October 31st, because 31 is 13 backwards. And so they abduct and ceremonial preparation of humans for sacrifice for purposes of black magic and hexes on October 31st. And then every once in a while, it's rare, but I think it's once every 100 years, and this happened a while back, where Halloween happens on a full moon. So that's called Black Sabbath.
Now, will it this year?
Not this year, I don't believe.
But this is an important year for them.
Yeah. And then the highest of the Black Sabbaths is October the 13th on a full moon, on Friday the 13th.
But I guess my point is, if they don't get these things done, then their kingdom is coming down.
Yeah, it's already in process. And the Alliance is already prepared for what's coming, what they're trying to do. And they are really good at essentially Tai Chi or Aikido type moves, where they use your enemy's forces and force against them and their techniques and everything against them and turn them around on them.
Well, you know, we're seeing that now here on, you know, right now. You know, they are literally destroying themselves. And this Olbermann creature, you know, we talked briefly and I didn't know who he was until this. Somewhere in the peripheral of my mind, I've heard his name in conjunction with maybe MSNBC or something like that. But I never watched him or wouldn't even know him on the street. Until this meltdown that he had. And these people are literally losing it, and they have no ability to move outside of themselves and see how guilty it makes them look. I mean, they're self-destructing.
Yeah, and because once you don't have a soul anymore, you're not capable of creating things.
Yeah.
You can only take what's already been created and twist it and turn it and kick pieces from here and pieces from there and put it together inside out and backwards.
Yeah. So what are they are scrambling around. What are the important dates again in October for them?
October 13th and October 31.
Oh, 31 and 13th. So those are the big days for them.
Right. And that's why Q says think mirror, because that's how they always work.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that. You know, and a lot of times it's like own, you know, Oprah's own is the New World Order backwards.
Exactly.
They like that. That's like mocking to them, I guess.
Exactly.
So can the White Hats reverse any kind of through, you know, prayer and, you know, just the same answering what they are doing in the spiritual, I guess is what I'm asking. Can they reverse a lot of what they've done or accelerate the reverse of it?
That's exactly how it's done. It's through prayer to God and, you know, Christ, that everything is inverted and sent back to where it came from. And it actually amplifies it. It's like when you in Aikido, you know, somebody punches and you recirculate that energy back to them. It amplifies it so that it comes back usually between two times as powerful or up to about 10 times as powerful.
So let me ask you this. And this is I'm not pointing fingers or trying to make people feel bad or anything, but I am just curious about this. Because my neighbors have Halloween decorations and there's people with lots of Halloween decorations still on their homes. And they are helping them in this, are they not?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's why I won't have any Halloween decorations anymore. And can you, and I know you know this, is it the Druids with the, you know, this acronym, or not acronym, but, alias that has been supposedly applied to John Brennan as the, quote, lotion pumpkin. And that's supposed to be his code name or his, you know, he's involved in child pornography and child trafficking, but he goes online is known as the lotion pumpkin. So I've been making fun of that, but it was pointed out to me that there is a very serious part to that. And it does go with Halloween, and it involves the Druids, and they did have these pumpkins, and that this is probably what this nickname has to do with. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, and it goes back to literally how they put together the word Halloween. When you wean, it means you're weaning, like it means when a mother stops breastfeeding. So the child's being weaned. That's why they created Halloween, so they could wean the children away from their parents and then hollow them out for blood sacrifice. In other words, drain the blood, you know, torture the child, get the adrenochrome, drain the blood, take out the pineal. They're hollowing the child out for satanic sacrifice using the blood, the pineal, and all of that. So, and they're weaning them away through this trick of, you know, like they said, trick or treat. So they're treating themselves by playing a trick on all of us with by getting these children when they're out and about. And that ties to the whole meaning and the derivation. You know, people will think it comes from some other places, but with the cabal, they love to play tricks with words.
Oh yeah. They're the most, I would call them consummate liars or prolific liars, but there's no skill to it. They just lie unabashedly. It's like, it's almost like they lie just for the sake of lying, just for the sake of covering up for no reason whatsoever. And I've never seen anything like it. It's mind blowing. But what about this part about where they have the pumpkins and don't they put a lot of this stuff in pumpkins and put it on the doorsteps of what? Didn't the druids do this?
Yes, and that's part of the black magic.
And what are the specifics of that again?
It's to wean the children away, to use the blood and the pineal and the adrenochrome and all that to cast their spells.
Leaving it on the doorstep.
Yeah, that goes back to when in Egypt you put the mark on the door so that it would pass over. This is putting the blood mark of a sacrificed child on the doorstep so it won't pass over. It'll actually go into the home.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, this is like evil. I mean,
exactly.
Beyond anything. And by using these symbols, the pumpkin, it's all symbolic of their ritual, you know, the same as Christmas. You know, when you learn a Christmas tree is a penis and a wreath is a vagina, it kind of takes the festivity off of it. Although President Trump says we're going to say Merry Christmas again. I don't know. I'm kind of leery of it now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I wanted to shift on over because this moon landing thing, and mm-hmm. I know you know a lot about this. Now, yep. So far, what I've in my Into the Unknown, and I've been exploring this, and I've covered the what's his name, the astronaut, the Freemason. I can't think of it. Buzz Armstrong. It's a recorded voice that they did shut the voice off, but there was an emergency recording going on in case they got into some kind of situation and they needed aid. They had a second recording that picked up what Buzz Armstrong saw when they approached the moon. And they were talking about seeing cities and buildings and stuff.
Yeah.
William Tompkins, I'm sorry. Yeah. And he actually did a sketch of what they saw. And they saw that on the monitors in NASA.
Yes.
I don't know. Oh, yes. Bob Wood is the other one. Now, I was wondering if you knew of anybody else that is telling that story and if you could add to that story or just briefly go over what you know about it.
Back when I was first red-pilling back in the 90s, I've actually watched some of the original stuff. I had a spook or spy that hacked into NASAnet. He could hack into NASA. So we could look at that original stuff as well as new stuff like I watched the lunar rover driving around on the backside of the moon, around a lake, you know, under a dome and all that stuff, live feed. And so on that landing, when they first got there, there were Alpha Draco ships, which are look almost exactly like the dreadnoughts they show in Star Wars that later the Draco gave to the Nazis as part of the Dark Fleet. But those were lined up, and then the Draco were standing out there looking down at the astronauts. So the astronauts were told by mission control to make sure the cameras only faced in one direction. And it was exactly that kind of thing of the unknown and the unplanned for in a case something went wrong that they they had a person, a very famous producer, who's now coming out about it, how he made a movie about the lunar landing. And this is what I tell people: when you're involved with the cabal and you're asking, did we go to the moon or was it a movie? The answer is almost always all of the above. Like when you take a test in school, the best answer is usually all of the above. So yeah, they made a movie, but they also went there, and that's why they made a movie. And when they first came out and landed, he stepped out and he did not say one small step for man, one great step for mankind. He went back in and came out and did that later. The first thing he came out, he planted a Masonic plaque and said, one small step for man, one great step for Masonic brotherhoods. And so it goes into, all these levels of things. And then people will remember that while they're on the moon, there's another part of the capsule that they went there that's orbiting the moon, waiting for them to come back up. And the first time it went around the backside of the moon, it was at 50 miles up from the surface of the moon. And then, and you have to think of, if you're going there, you only have what fuel you took. So if you're going to adjust your altitude, that takes fuel. You're not going to do that unless you have to, because that fuel you also need to get home with. And they adjusted after the first orbit, they raised the altitude to 150 miles. I mean, why would they do that?
Yeah.
It's because while they were going around the backside, towers were flying past the window. They were like, whoa, there's huge towers back here. They're over 50 miles tall of titanium and glass. And that's also some of that has a lot of that. This side of the moon has had a lot of devastation and a lot of those towers. There was a Look magazine article where they showed back in the 50s what looked like from one of the big telescopes on Earth. They said it was a bridge on the moon. It was one of those towers falling over. And so they got some lunar rocks back, and they said that at one time the moon had liquid rivers of titanium and glass. Titanium doesn't occur naturally except in an ore, where it's combined with other things. It's not like raw liquid titanium flowing in rivers in nature anywhere at any temperature on any planet or asteroid or anything. That's the remnants of a lot of those towers that happened from a big, huge war between Atlantis and Lemuria a long time ago. And this side, all the devastation, that's what you're seeing. It's primarily not from meteor strikes. It's from particle bombardment during that war. And so a lot of the towers and the titanium is blown and melted and glass. And they have also big, huge, another reason they had to keep the cameras focused in one place is they have big, huge debris and remnants of structures that you can, because they're partially destroyed, and quite a bit destroyed in some cases, structures that are made out of transparent aluminum that you can see against the horizon when it lines up with the blackness of space behind it. You can see the jaggedy things of this structure kind of being, refracting off, like even with glass, you can sometimes catch a reflection or something. They could see that as well.
Well, and then there's the guy that found the photographs. And I don't know whether, I can't remember if he was working for the Marines or the Army or whatever. He was working for the military, and he was a photographer or he was archiving things. And they said, head on, they need you over at NASA. And he got over there, he was put in charge of all these photographs. And he found photographs of the backside of the moon and structures. And he was showing them, he reported them and expected to see them on the news the next day. And it was crickets. He realized then they told him to destroy them. So he realized that they were going to cover it up, that they, and he did not destroy some of the photographs. They're out there. And he saw all kinds of things.
Yeah, and what they've done with a lot of the old photographs that you can do, it's very easy to see a lot of what was back there, is they made the Photoshop we have today is way more advanced than what they had back then. So all they did is they took part of the screen where the big city is all lit up on the backside of the moon, and they took an arc through it, and then they adjusted the contrast down to where it's pitch black. So if you take some of the the old pictures and bring the contrast up, you'll actually, where it looks like the darkness of space, you'll see that a big city will come up. If you just change, you know, copy it, you can even just bring it into a Word document. I'm not very techie. I bring it into a Word document and just bring up the contrast. this is really low for me.
Would it be safe to say, because I've heard a lot from a lot of people that would know, you know, and it's shocking what I've learned about the moon from people who know, you know, that I trust their knowledge.
Yeah, the moon's actually
would it be safe to say that, yeah, all that is going on the backside of the moon, and maybe the side that we can see is a trash dump, you know, of some kind, but is it safe to say that most of the activity would be inside of the moon?
Yeah, the big stuff is inside still. And then, you know, that's why when the Nazis first went there in the 30s and they made an agreement with Alpha Draco and the Zeta Reticuli, because every square inch of the surface of the moon has already been, you know, spoken for by various non-terrestrial groups. So there was no real estate that they could use unless they traded. So they traded some of the top of the SS, they thought, to be honored by the Alpha Draco in exchange for the base they built that looks like, at that time, the shape of a swastika. Of course, they love their symbols. And then later, the U.S. took that over and built it out so it doesn't look like that anymore as Lunar Operation Center A, and they now have A, B, C, and D. But inside the moon is hollow. That's why when they let the lander fall back and crash into the moon, it rang for quite a long time because it rings like a bell because it's hollow. You have a big, huge inner structure that then has a big plating structure over it. And a lot of the debris and stuff and the dust and all of that that's on the surface of the moon, you know, that's several miles thick, is from the time it came here and got into Locke. And it's not locked the way any other. That's, again, you know, there's two Russian scientists that came up with looking at all the facts about and the information and how the moon orbits us and all of that. They said it's way easier to prove the moon doesn't exist than to explain how it does exist.
I just want to break in. This guy's mowing my neighbor's lawn right up against my window. That noise is going to be loud, and I just want to, you know, let people know it is me. It's coming from my side.
Okay.
It's not coming from Gene's side. It's coming from my side. Just a question while we're on the subject. I have heard that the moon is a hollowed out asteroid.
It's actually built up. It's built as a giant space arc for the Anunnaki and the pre-Adamite cultures on Mars that went to war with the Jovians and wound up blowing up the planet in between, and which was the home of the humans at the time, which was Tiamat. They blew it up. That's the what's left of that is the asteroid belt. And in the asteroid belt, there's a small planet, which is called Ceres, where they have bases now.
So, this hollowed out asteroid, I've heard, has cities inside of it.
What I've told is it's built from the center outwards and then with the outer plating, and everything's on shock so that if meteors hit it, the outside actually moves and flexes and rings back and forth so it doesn't shatter the entire apparatus. It has over 800 floors, levels inside it. It has a big, huge gravitational device that keeps it in the tidal lock where one side always faces us, because that's not natural. That's not normally found in nature. Moons don't orbit such that, you know, they roll around. They don't keep one face locked in tidal lock. And so that's all devised by apparatus and controlled and maintained even to now for all these, you know, very thousands of years that the moon's been orbiting. It only shows us a total of 52% of its surface. It doesn't show most, and that was on purpose. So you can hide all kinds of stuff on the back and the people on the planet you're orbiting. And there's a few other planets that have moons locked like that. There's not many, but in every single case, those are actually just like our moon. They're just space stations that are there to control and manipulate and keep the slaves in line. You know, if you go back to the plantations and that in the South, it's the same principle. You have the big White House where the owners live, and then you have all the minions, the slaves out in their, you know, their hovels that you control. It's the same thing. They have their big White House up there, and then we're down here in our little tiny hovel houses, you know, that are nothing. You know, we're not living anywhere near. I mean, we're flying around in aluminum cans while they have, you know, craft that can go across the Milky Way faster than we can go down to the store. It's like pathetic. And we live, you know, they live in the lap of luxury by draining all of our wealth off through fake taxes and all kinds of things. While we work ourselves half to death trying to make a living, they're living in a level of opulence that's quite almost for most people impossible to imagine.
Yeah, but they still are ugly.
Yeah, it's like their sense of, I don't know why. They're sick of
not going to wash the ugly away.
Yeah. And for me, the ugly goes all the way. It's not like skin deep. It's all the way to the core because they have no soul. So there's nothing beautiful about them anymore.
Yeah, I say they're ugly to the bone.
Yeah. And I wanted to go back to what you're saying about Obermann, because Obermann actually has meaning. The name Obermann, it means one who can keep his lips sealed or keeps his mouth shut, in other words. It also ties to the goddess or the god of the sea, which if you go back into Greek times and the god of the sea, that's one of Lucifer's names.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Well,
so
you know,
Obermann refers to a god-like being who can keep his mouth shut that's in service to Satan. And that Greek god would be Poseidon, I believe. But that is actually just Lucifer, another one of Lucifer's names.
Well, it's kind of funny that you said that, because in my video yesterday, I did a whole thing on him. And one of the things I noticed because I took stills of him while he was ranting, and his face, you would not believe how this guy's face changed so dramatically. And I said it was a mild form of shape-shifting, because he was so animated and his eyes were just insane. And but his mouth would literally tighten up into the middle of his, just like a gray. You know how the grays have the little thin line, like right in the middle of their face, and it's tight? It's just a line. That's the way this guy's mouth was looking. So it's funny you should say that, he, you know, what his name means, and his mouth was just disappearing. It was all tight and sealed up. So his looks match his the meaning of his name.
Yes, totally. I mean, he totally looks at the part, the meaning of his name. You're right. It looks like a, you know, a Zeta reticuli, little tiny band of mouth with almost no lips at all.
None. And they literally were non-existent. I mean, it was incredible to watch, because his face shifted all around and it looked like about 16 different people. But one of the things I noticed about him was that his eyes, his pupils were really, really tiny, and his eyes were just about ready to jump out of his head. I mean, this guy was panicking.
Yeah. And that's, you know, they're panicking. They all are, because they're not used to being on a defensive. They're used to being in control, and they have no idea how to do defensive tactics at all. So that when you've never been on the defensive and you're forced to be, and you don't have any defensive tactics, you go into absolute panic.
Well, you know, Gene, I was pointing out in some of my videos that they've never campaigned before. They've always stolen every election. They don't know how to campaign. And so what do they do? They come out and they threaten. Okay, we're going to cause riots in the street unless you vote for us.
Exactly.
This is the way they campaign, because they're hysterical lizards.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it. It's like when you get a lizard freaked out and it was running all over the place, slamming into stuff.
Exactly. You know who just on the funny side of lizards, Bill Gates and those hand motions he makes all the time with his hands, his fingers all splayed out. I've never seen anyone that looks more like a lizard than Bill Gates. That this is what I say, you know, that you cannot dismiss this reptilian thing. You can't dismiss it because, first of all, they're eating kids. Okay. You know, I mean, that's where it begins for me. Who would do this? You know, and then as you go out, you find out it becomes more and more obvious who would do it. Certainly, it's still impossible for me to see actual human beings doing it. I think they must be hybrids or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Primarily the ones that aren't the lizard types.
Yeah, right. The lizard
are half there.
Yeah, exactly. Because across the board, they are described as parasites.
Yeah.
And it's a parasitic biology. And they are destroyers.
Yeah.
They don't add anything.
Exactly. And, you know, when they're out there running around, I totally wouldn't be surprised to see one's forked tongue come out and grab a mosquito or a fly going by. It wouldn't shock me at all. I thought so.
On one of my, I'll have to go back and see who this guy is. I think it was a local news show. But on one of my lizard specials, my reptilian specials, I had a clip of two news guys, right? And they were arguing about something, politics.
Oh, I've seen that one, yeah.
Where the guy hisses at him?
Yeah.
He goes, he just hisses at him, just like, what's his name? You know, in Silence of the Lambs, he just hisses.
Just like a lizard does.
I mean,
when he gets upset.
It was like he had that hiss. He was holding that hiss back the whole time, and then he cut loose with it. It was the innate lizard in him was just coming out.
Yeah, they call us deplorable.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the joke. That's the joke. The nerve of these people and giving themselves awards for, you know, being humanitarians. And it's sickening. It's sickening. So I wanted to read you some.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, what were you going to say?
The reason they do the humanitarian is they're not human. So they, meaning humanitarian is how you use humans the best.
Oh, so then that makes it triple mock because not only are they doing the exact opposite of what that word means, but they're also, now it's a triple mock because there's another meaning to it as well.
Exactly.
That's against us. You know, it was explained to me by someone that another person in the know that movie, The Planet of the Apes,
yes.
They look at that as their story. In other words, they fell to Earth and they landed on the Planet of the Apes, and the apes are us.
Exactly. And, you know, in how they use us best, it means, like, you know, if you really are good with your sheep or your flock, you teach the sheep, you don't even need a sheepdog anymore. The flock keeps themselves. So if a sheep drifts off and starts going the wrong way, the other sheep corral that sheep back in. They go, hey, you're going over, we got to go over here. The farmer wants us to march into this band, you know, because they're going to slaughter, right? So you don't even have to have a dog. We've been trained to keep ourselves in line. So if somebody gets out of line and starts going, I don't think the farmer is really, you know, just taking us to go get our fur shaved off. I think there might be something more underhanded going on here. But the sheep keep, we've been trained to keep ourselves. So when somebody is unique or different, we look at that person and start ridiculing them and saying, well, you're weird and you're, you know, deplorable and despicable. You're living in a fantasy. You don't have any idea. You just go on and on about it. And you see it with, especially when we're young and children, where the bullies beat up on the kid that's unique and gifted because we've been trained to be afraid of that, so that we don't honor that beauty of a unique individual with all kinds of special gifts and, you know, are very intelligent, you know, and all of these abilities. We've been trained to take out the best of our own kind.
But you know, Gene, as time has gone on and these people have degenerated in their personal appearance.
Well, I don't know if it's degenerating. You look at Martha Washington, I'm like, holy.
Oh, I know.
Or Queen Victoria. We know what Victoria's secret was. I don't think you're a lady. That's your secret. Like Big Mike. It's the same thing all over again. And I'm thinking the same thing with Martha. I really don't think you're a lady.
But you know, I'm talking like Donatella Versace. Oh. And you know those twins that they're trying to tout around, these totally retarded, grotesque circus freak twins that supposedly used to be good looking. There's a lot of people out there that have a lot of money and yeah, that are a whole lot of ugly, you know, like that. It's not Beatrice. It's one of those queens and it looks just like a lizard. Do you know who I'm talking about? It's the ugliest one.
I think a part of what we're also seeing is because the earth is not just humans, but the earth is going through the Great Awakening, the energy levels are going up and they're not at that energy level. And so they're having trouble holding the shapeshift. And so a lot of what they really are starting to poke through and the cracks are showing through. And so and that's why they have to take the human blood, is to have that energy to reiterate into the shapeshift. And now that the energy of the earth is increasing and being more in service to God and in line with that and at a very high frequency, they're having more and more difficulty and having to take more and more. You know, it used to be they only had to do it like once a month or so. Now they have to do it every day, multiple times a day.
You know, to that point, I also heard that, and I do to some extent believe that what David Icke has to say about this whole system of, you know, they're keeping our frequencies even lower. Like we have the potential to have higher frequencies, but in order for them to exist in our environment, they have to keep our frequencies low through this system of vibrations and things that it does have to do with the moon and possibly Saturn or Mars. Some kind of, like we are in some kind of a vibrational cage, if you will.
Yeah, they actually called it the thought sphere. It's a thought energy field that's projected from our amplified bar moon, projected from the inside of Saturn, then picked up by the rings, reiterated, and also by the three primary moons with the big six-sided satellite dishes on them, Tethys, Mimas, and Iapetus, that then amplify the signal. And it's to keep the energy and frequencies and our energies down. And then, of course, the 5G made by Apple and Huawei was to completely lock and gridline the entire system, and all the satellites are putting up was to do that.
Yeah.
And so we can't go through ascension and we can't go through the Great Awakening and wake up with all of this stuff that they've been doing for so long. And they're trying to suppress that now that, you know, the timeline's changing into, you know, into service to God instead of service to their fake God, Satan. And they're trying to maintain control, but you're trying to stop an avalanche. They're not going to be able to. You're in a time in which the power is so massive compared to anything they've ever experienced that they're not. That's why Q said nothing can stop what's coming, because the level of energy that it's going to come soon is so vast that there's no technology that's going to stop it.
And, you know, I mean, a little, this thing fascinates me, what we're talking about right now. And a little to this point, one of the things that Icke said that really resonated with me, no pun intended, is the fact that the pentagram and the octagon and all of these sigils are actually the shapes that are created by the frequency of Saturn.
Yeah.
So exactly. They are receivers of this signal.
Yes. And if
as the pyramids were all over the globe, the receivers of these certain signals by virtue of their shape.
Exactly what you said is they can't create. All they can do is take something and bastardize it.
The other thing I wanted to mention about this whole system that we're talking about, but getting more over, because all of this is connected to the Earth and the Moon. I've also heard that there is a library an archive or a library inside that's one of the file system or whatever, where they have these chips with actually the old ones, what they call the old ones, and their consciousnesses are supposed to be on there, on these chips in this library system. And a lot of these ceremonies and stuff that they do, where they're torturing kids and all this craziness that's going on, is to activate these things, that they do it on certain nights where they can activate these chips. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that it's the energies lined up with the pyramids and the different ley lines on Earth to like Orion and various satanic areas, then allows them to activate those big, huge supercomputers inside the moon to bring those chips online, like big, massive servers, but bigger than what we know as a server. It's like a big, huge supercomputer, and it has all these chips that store all these consciousnesses. Of course, you don't store the soul, but you just store the consciousness. So no soul, no morality at all. And right. Then also is stored all of the genetic information of those beings, so that was why it was originally created as a space ark to recreate, once they took over the Earth and wiped us all out, to recreate their system, that their original planet that they pretty much wiped out from their war that they did and blew up the Tiamat.
And so that's what they do. They just destroy things.
Yeah. Everywhere they go. I mean, originally where their home planets, which were Ariana and Na, they had to leave there because they blew them completely to pieces in their home star system, which was Scion, S-C-I-O-N, like the car now. Originally, the bastardization of that was Zion or Zionism. That's where it came from, was Scion. And they destroyed their home worlds. And that's why they changed that. They like to play games with names and words. And so then we came up with the terms Aryans and Nazis, and that's from Ariana and Na, which is their original homeworlds.
Well, you know, Arizona Wilder, when she starts out talking about this, and to me, everything she says is so calm and precise, and it makes so much horrible sense. But she starts out her whole, you know, she's talking about it to David Icke
That was a really excellent interview.
Excellent. I mean, she just encapsulates the whole thing in a very simple sentence that everyone should be able to understand. But she starts out by going, the Aryans. And this is what I am thinking are the extraterrestrials, or what they're looking at as the extraterrestrials are calling themselves, right? The Illuminati.
I call them non-terrestrials because I don't think they're extra anything. They're not. There's no extra to them.
But they're not human.
Yeah, exactly. And so they're the Ariana and the Na, which are both lizard creatures. So, and I'm not saying all lizard creatures are evil. There's some really great ones. But in this case, with the Alpha Draco, that's not even close to the case. There's nothing extra or special about them other than they're extra predating.
I just was using the word, you know, because this brings me to, I mean, this is kind of, you know how conversations go, they have to be organic. This one's going in this direction. But this brings me to this idea, or this fact, if you will, that many of these people have a third strand of DNA that is mechanical in nature.
Yeah, humans actually originally had 48 and are down to 12, of which two are activated. But all of those are organic. Their third strand was to copy the part of the Great Awakening as the Indigo Children, and now they're crystalline, where that it, first you energize a strand and then you have to crystallize it so that it, and this is organically crystallized, so that then it's activated and you can actually use it. And in their case, because they don't even have that, because they don't have soul, so they, artificial intelligence-wise, created a third strand for themselves to mimic the human. And that's why they study our genetics, and all these groups come here to do that, because they're trying to get what humans have. And so they're trying to mimic, and they'll create it synthetically, artificial intelligence-wise. And, you know, that's also why you see, I see that they're okay with David Icke telling about the lizards and all that, because they can't hold the shape anymore for much longer. So it allows for it to be gotten out for years and years and years, so that when it, you actually, they can't hold the shape anymore. They, yeah, we heard about that. It doesn't shock people, and they don't freak out. They don't want people shocked and freaked out. So they were fine with David Icke putting it out. And that's why they didn't take him out, because there's only so much longer that they can hide. They're not going to be able to hide. And so you want to do, like Tavistock Institute, long-range preconditioning of information beforehand, so that when you can't maintain the secrecy anymore, then...
Quincy Artichoke.
Yeah, Quincy Artichoke. Go back and edit that part out.
Yeah, I will.
So, yeah, Quincy Artichoke, you know, thanks to that, Quincy Artichoke and all the, I'll use that. I like that.
Quincy Artichoke, he's a world famous, you know, spy. Right now, I'm just looking into the reptilians. I'm kind of taking this a step at a time. And as you know, I have been looking into the Vril lizards, which I believe they exist. I believe they use them to scare the kids and do all kinds of horrible things with these things. And I believe a lot of these Antifa and these Black Lives Matter people that are up here could be drones of these things.
Yeah. And it's like you said, it's hard to believe, but you know, when the, you know, from my understanding with these lizards, these Vril, that when they take over, the only the lower four chakras can they do. So the you know, it's the, they're using the of the chakras, they're using the pineal and then the lower three, so they can take over some of the mind and memory, and then they can take over the lower three chakras, which are, you know, there's no heart or compassion in the in those. So then what you've got is somebody that's only thinking sexually, survival wise and eating, and then they're able to use the mind, but they have no compassion, there's no heart in there at all, and no
like
soul in there
sing.
At all.
They like to sing and they like to dance.
Yeah.
They like to do those two things too. Rap music. They like rap music.
Yeah.
They're basically every you know, college student. I mean,
yeah, I'm okay with some rap music, but as a whole, when you're listening to music, I mean, like some of the Red Pill stuff with like Jason Was a Gentile is wonderful, but you listen to stuff like you know, that's just demeaning yourself and demeaning others, you know, that's very racist, sexist, etc., there's nothing uplifting about it. So if you're listening to that kind of rap music and it has that huge heavy beat and you're driving in a car and the you've got these super woofers with massive power behind it, that's destroying your organs. That's at a frequency that destroys the liver. You watch what's going to happen in 4 or 5 years from now when liver cancer goes through the ceiling, because you're resonating your organs at a very detrimental frequency. And that energy is so powerful, you're starting to crystallize the steel of the car and make fractures in the steel of the car because you're beating it so hard.
Well, also, not to mention it damages your eardrums, but also it lowers your frequency. Yep. You have to actually consciously lower your own frequency to even be involved in it. And a lot of MK Ultra people who are involved in this at the cloning centers and all of this, like Nicki Minaj and all these people, are saying that it is actual voodoo beats that they take and make these, you know, these rap songs are based, a lot of them, on witchcraft, you know. Yep. So they are conjuring up something. I don't know what they're conjuring up, but they're lowering everybody's vibrations. And, you know, they have their ways of putting purposes to everything.
Yeah. Maybe they're conjuring up the lizards.
Well, that's what, you know what? They're enlarging that reptilian part of the brain that really is the reptilian part of your brain, which is in the back. And that gets engorged and large and enlarged from this stuff. All of this music, this loud, like heavy metal and rap and all of that is engorging the ape part of your brain or the reptilian part of your brain, all the lower vibrational parts of your brains. I wanted to get into this because we'll only get into the first part of it for this interview because it goes on. And I'd like to talk more about this the next interview we do.
And, you know, this regarding what you're saying on that, you know, reminds me, I used to do construction when I first got out of the Navy for a while. And I was working on a house, a friend of mine and I were, that I worked with, were working on a house. And the young man that was there living with his parents all day long was playing rap. That heavy, you know, very derogatory language type rap was just pounding and pounding. And finally went and asked him, you know, I listen to music like classical and different things to uplift me, and it gives me feelings, you know, to be kind and considerate and loving and love nature and love other people. And that's the feelings I get from it. What feeling does this give you? And he thought about it a while. He goes, I don't know. I go, well, think about it and let me know. And he thought about it for about half an hour. And then he came back and he told me, it makes me feel like my head's in a box. I'm like, that's a feeling you like? I was like, okay, that's what it does. Put your head in a box, Linda.
Well, you know, I took dancing lessons for a long time, ballet and tap and jazz when I was little, and I liked to dance. And it used to be that anything that made me want to dance, I would like it, you know. I don't, you know, these people, these kids, that they probably don't think too much above, you know, oh, it just makes me feel good, you know, or makes me feel like I want to dance, or it just makes me feel like, you know, acting up in some way. Exactly. So I wanted to read you some of this stuff and get your opinion on some of this. Now, this is a transcript. And this guy's grandmother, he's taking care of his grandmother. He's in the house taking care of his grandmother. This was presented as a true series of posts on Reddit. And I have the whole conversation, you know, that, and all of the posts, which were spaced apart. You know, there was a certain amount of time that between each one. So it felt like he was working off of the tape recordings of his grandmother, or the audio of the interview of his grandmother. So she was dying and she was sick, and she was former employee of NASA. And she just started talking to him about all this stuff. And he started recording it because it was so crazy. And then he wrote these posts on Reddit. And everybody was like, we can't wait for the next one. Hurry up, you know. And it'd be like a month or something, and the guy would finally get it done. So this is one of the parts of the transcript at the beginning. It says, my name is Evelyn Laura Smart. I was a mission control contact with NASA from 1959 to 1999. I was the one that any astronauts or crew would speak to, the voice on the ground. I relayed this information back to whoever needed it in flight control, navigation, engineering, and such. And she talks about how she didn't set out to work there, but she was so excited to be talking to our very own spaceman. And she goes into a little tangent about how lovely Armstrong and Aldrin are, with many mentions about Christmas cards from Aldrin. So this, one of the things that she says here, what a lot of people don't realize is that there were manned space flights before the ones on the history books. There was an initial manned space flight in 1960. The Daedalus. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, and there was also one that went to Mars in that time frame.
Daedalus? Do you know that word? Daedalus?
Diabolus. It ties to diabolic.
Daedalus. Daedalus.
Yeah, that's a demon that is the origination of the term diabolic.
So, all of these are named after these Greek gods and stuff, Apollo, and then they all have occult names. It said, never read about that one, hey. It was kept tightly under wraps. We didn't want anyone to know about it until we had them back on the ground successfully. Otherwise, it may kill morale around the office. So they kept a small crew and launched the rocket off from an isolated area of Alaska. We did a lot of launches from there, kept the Reds on their toes back in the day. Anyway, this was a three-man crew. And she names these names, Bill Zask, James Hanlon, and Terry Duncan. And he says they were supposed to go up for 12 hours. And if anybody saw them coming down after 12 hours, they were going to pass it off as a comet. But there was a malfunction. And they said, we don't know what caused the malfunction. I heard them shouting, trying to fix the issue. It didn't happen. So they just went out. The jets continued firing, taking them even further out of orbit. We maintained radio contact with them for 20 hours after takeoff. I spoke with them as fuel ran out. They began drifting into the void, no hope of turning, never to feel solid ground again. To this day, I don't know if it was something they really saw or the insanity getting to them as they died and faced their mortality. James was the first to begin raving, telling us about the bodies floating by the cockpit windows. I tried to clarify what he meant, assuming celestial bodies. I'll never forget the response from Bill. No, Evelyn, he said to me, human bodies, dozens of them. They described the field of bodies, male and female, old and young, all naked as the day they were born. Bill swore that one smiled at him as he went by. We didn't have live feed cameras at the time, unfortunately, so we weren't able to confirm. The way they described it, though, I have no doubt they were seeing all of this. And she says a lot of the transmissions got lost in static.
Yep, I totally agree. I think that ties to the a mission I know that is what Farscape is built based on, where they had a craft that got sucked down a black hole and wound up in a far different part of the universe.
Well, it just sounds like something you couldn't. It would be hard to make that up. So I'm gonna stop it right there, because this is gonna be a long, but this thing goes on, and I was able to match up her stories to the only one I wasn't sure of was this one.
It's pretty hard to go into that kind of detail off the cuff.
Well, this is what I was telling you about, where she goes into the blood church.
Yeah, exactly. And I have heard of that.
You have heard of the blood church?
Yes.
Well, we'll talk about the blood church next time. So, Jean, thank you so much. I hope that we can come back later and talk more about these things, the moon, the Dracos, the everything. And thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you, Linda. It's always such an honor to be on your show. And I love your show. You have the most excellent snarky, sarcastic humor. And people don't like my laughing. And it's sarcasm, because I'm not laughing at sometimes it's nervousness, but I'm not laughing at like children, the terrible stuff that's being done and all that. I'm laughing at the fact that they're now being caught, and that the children are being taken away from them, and that they're starving to death for adrenochrome and dying from it. That's what I'm laughing. I'm laughing at their deplorableness and their despicableness coming to an end. It's a laugh of joy from my heart and my soul that it's coming to an end. And that's what I laugh about. And that's why I love your sarcasm, you know, of how that's all coming to an end and, you know, the lizards and all that stuff. So I want to, you know, thank you so much, Linda. God bless you for everything you do. You're so amazing.
You're certainly welcome. Yeah, I laugh at the fact that they're losing and I laugh at their ugly faces because they're ugly and they call themselves better than us, but I'm not quite sure how that's supposed to work. And they are embarrassed because they're so ugly. I'm convinced of it. So always one to jump on the bandwagon of poking fun at them. And I also laugh at the fact that I even have to talk about lizards.
Really, it's pretty bizarre, isn't it? I mean, yes. If you told me 40 years ago, I'd be talking about lizard people.
Like a lot of times I'll go, can you believe I have to say this?
Really?
It's like unbelievable that I even have to say these things now. Yeah. So if you don't laugh at it, it will destroy you.
Exactly.
And you have to find these people are worthy of a good laugh, I can tell you, because they're failing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like in the movie Peaceful Warrior, a sense of humor is absolutely mandated, because without that, you know, people need to develop that, however you develop it, so that you don't lose your mind. Because, you know, I've had times where I can't sleep for a week with some of the stuff I find out, and it's just so horrendous. And you got to have somehow where you can look at things in a way that can get you some humor so that you can not have your soul go dark and not have all your, you know, all of your thoughts and feelings just turned into this darkness that just sucks you up. You got to have some humor, and humor comes from God. So, you know, it's something we all need to learn.
And God has a sense of humor because he made, first of all, he made Swalwell fart on national TV.
And he made Oprah fall, had an angel push Oprah, and she fell down on stage when she was talking about balance. She fell over. It was like, and then Madonna went flying out into the audience. God has the best sense of humor of all. I mean, when I had my death experience for half an hour and I was asking God how he created everything, he said, well, I used my word. And I go, explain. And he said, well, at first there was not even a place for creation to be. But then I said, and so then there was light, but still there was nothing. But by God, you could see it. I was like, that's great.